My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 2,100 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years' experience in the technology and aviation industries.
Here we go. We're at the Plane Talk cockpit, Edenvale Municipal Airport in scenic downtown Edenvale, Ontario, part of the CASARA training exercise with some really cool folks I'd like to welcome into the Plane Talk cockpit. Captain Marty Zimmer, Royal Canadian Air Force. He's the CASARA liaison office. And before I forget, Marty, let us thank you for your service. And Terry Nord, he's the Director of Operations of CASARA. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you, Phil.
It's quite the training exercise today. A bunch of ground vehicles, aircraft, over almost 50 folks, both CASARA and, of course, the Royal Canadian Air Force. Terry, why don't you tell us a little bit about CASARA?
CASARA is a national Canadian organization, stands for Civil Air Search and Rescue Association. It's been in place for this is our 35th year. We've got close to 2,000 volunteers across all 10 provinces and the three territories. As I said, all volunteer. I got access to over 200 aircraft for air search. We also have ground search teams, and now working with the remote piloted aircraft system, also known as a drone, to support the RCAF, and in our case in Ontario, 424 Squadron out of Trenton, and also the Joint Coordination Center out of Trenton for search and rescue.
I think, as you said, we've got 200 aircraft supporting the RCAF nationally.
That's national. There's some owned, some rented. We have access to that. We fly less than that, but through the private ownership and the rental program.
And Canada is such a large place, and with limited resources within the military. Marty, it must be just super awesome to have the folks with CASARA filling the gaps.
Yeah, it's that's one of the biggest challenges right now within the National Search and Rescue Program is the huge size of Canada and the limited resources we have. So the Royal Canadian Air Force provides primary search and rescue aircraft to the Joint Rescue Coordination Center to respond to aeronautical and maritime incidents. And we do support the province at times under what we call a humanitarian role, which is missing persons, missing swimmers, and so on. But again, with the limited resources we have, we rely on CASARA as a volunteer organization to give us some additional search and rescue aircrafts that we can employ under JRCC.
And it must be kind of like looking for a needle in a haystack.
Well, we do a lot of training, and that's what the exercise here is this weekend, because we got 9 zones in Ontario, Thunder Bay, Sault Ste. Marie, Sudbury, North Bay, New Liskeard, Edenvale, which is here, as well as Ottawa, Niagara, St. Catharines, and London. We got 5 of the zones here, and what we're doing is simulating looking for a downed aircraft simulated, and we've got 5 aircraft and 4 ground crews that we put through our training, various search patterns. We put simulated targets out as well as radio beacons for us to train.
I seem to recall that you folks found that missing Cessna Caravan.
Over the last few years, we have had a few major searches. So the Joint Rescue Coordination Center is responsible for, as I said, launching air assets when an aircraft goes missing. But if we can't locate it within a short period of time, then we go what's called major, and this is where we start bringing in a lot more aircraft. And CASARA is one of the major players. They'll bring 5, 7, sometimes even more. And more important is spotters, because a lot of it is searching massive amounts of area with people on board looking out the window. And CASARA trains their spotters, and we put them in all of the Air Force aircraft, as well as other organizations that help support us, like the we've had Coast Guard and some of the police services as well. So, yeah, we were bringing together large amounts of aircraft. I think on that particular major search, we had about 12 aircraft involved, and Casera is one of the major players. They had three or four involved, I think, if I remember on that one. So this exercise this weekend is an opportunity to try and get all the aircraft together and sort of reenact that type of an event, working, managing lots of resources within a small area. So it's keys that when the real operation happens, everybody knows the policy and procedures and we're ready to go.
I guess training is all about committing process procedure to muscle memory so that when a real tasking occurs, everyone knows what to do, when to do, how to do it, and execute the tasking safely, efficiently, and effectively, with hopefully the best possible outcome, finding some folks stuck in the bush.
And that's the focus, particularly now with we have a lot of technology that we use. In the old days, we, of course, had to use maps, but now we have technology such as ForeFlight, and we use another device called InReach for air-to-ground communication. Fortunately for us, we're able to fund that, and the military helps us fund the new equipment based on an annual budget. We have what we call a contribution agreement that is a five-year term that defines how much funding we get from the Department of National Defense, and we're able to spend and invest in a lot of new technology, and particularly now that we're in the RPAS drone business, it's moving very quickly.
Talk about RPAS for a moment and how that technology aids in a search.
Casera is the lead right now in a lot of this new technology. So we're just implementing a new program where we're taking drones and using them in a smaller box. So if you think of a major search where we're going to launch an aircraft and look for an area, if we have a higher probability area, then we can put a drone into that area. And we've been testing, 2 years, I think, Terry,
yes.
The different variety of RPASs. And we started out with the basic small one that, you know, you can buy off the shelf kind of thing, and now we're getting into more advanced with forward-looking infrared and laser-guided distances, and there's some pretty amazing kit, and we've already employed them several times in cases locating missing persons, and Casera's been supporting the provincial police authorities too, looking for missing persons. So this is something that's expanding, and we're trying to get all the units now basically qualified with this kit. So it's kind of an exciting time right now.
Part of my aviation DNA goes back to the 70s, building and flying radio control model airplanes.
That's one of my hobbies as well. So so this is advancing on that. But again, it's just one additional capability that Casera is bringing to the table right now.
As we said, if we have effective technology, can aid in a search and getting people found faster.
Absolutely. Timeliness is the most important thing in any SAR case for, trying to make sure that we can bring the loved ones back home. And the days go on, the outcome is not as successful, unfortunately. So that's why we want to do things as quickly as possible.
I was quite surprised to hear on the Cessna Caravan search that the aircraft had launched without an ELT installed.
Yeah, that's my understanding. So myself, I'm a qualified search master. Unfortunately, I was not particularly, Terry and I were not involved in this particular case because we were actually teaching a search master course in the Coast Guard College at the time, but we were following the case. Yeah, I mean, it's from the commercial side right now, most commercial operators have to have some form of ELT. Yeah, I don't have the details why it wasn't installed. I think there were some maintenance issues going on, but because there was no ELT on board and the area was covered fairly quickly in the first early moments of the aircraft missing, and we couldn't find the aircraft, that's why Joint Rescue Coordination Center decided to kind of go major right away, and we started bringing a lot more aircraft into the search efforts. So.
Yeah, personally, I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy. We've got, in the aircraft I fly, a 406 ELT, and of course I carry a few personal locating devices as well as a personal locating beacon, so that in the worst case scenario I'll be sitting on the ground as the SAR techs parachute in with the T going.
Absolutely. I mean, 406s are so important these days. The Canadian Mission Control Center, CMCC, which is co-located with JRCC in Trenton, holds the beacon registration for all 406s. So if they're registered and a beacon goes up, within a matter of minutes, the air coordinator who's running the case can make some calls and find out, in effect, if there is an aircraft that is in distress or not. And it'll reduce us launching our primary SAR assets on false cases, and we can solve it fairly quickly. Whereas if you compare that to, you know, a case with a 121.5 only, right now the only way we were made aware of that is from typically high flyers, and now we've got a launch aircraft trying to home it, and it takes a considerable amount of time. So it's a quicker response with a 406 for sure.
Yeah, the search area, of course, I go back to grade 13 math, but pi r squared being the distance of a search area based upon the radius. I think one of the benefits of the personal locating devices like the OnReaches that you folks use is the ability to drop breadcrumbs and subsequently reduce the radius of a search.
Yeah, so that's very important in the investigation stage. Like, if you can't find the aircraft right away, then looking at all these other ways of trying to determine what the aircraft whereabouts or intentions were helps in locating it.
So what's some of the coolest SAR cases that you've prosecuted?
Well, I don't know if you'd call them cool, but some of the ones that are challenging, I think, you know, as I said, the major cases are quite challenging. Over the course of the last 3 years, I've been involved as the search master running 3 major cases. Terry was one of my assistants as well. We haven't done those in quite a few years, and we thought with a lot of the new technology coming online, such as GPS and ADS-B and those things, that it would be quicker and easier to find people, but it seems people are relying on a lot of these things or don't seem that they need it. Cell phones and apps seem to be playing a large part. People feel that, you know, if they've got a cell phone, we're going to kind of know where they are, and unfortunately that's not the case. So we still need to rely on the specific beacons, distress beacons, ELTs and so on, so that we can be alerted quickly.
Yeah, and just, you know, one of the other comments I don't want to forget is our other SAR partner volunteer organization is the Canadian Coast Guard Auxiliary, that are attached to the Canadian Coast Guard, and we work very closely with both of those. So we've got RCAF, CASARA, Coast Guard, and Coast Guard Auxiliary, particularly on the lakes, Lake Ontario, Lake Erie. I think we had 14 cases last year of persons in the water overdue, most of them without life vests. And we're out there, we've got some pretty neat technology that we'll show you later with cameras. We're able to take pictures from the aircraft, camera mounted on the underwing. We do a lot of joint training with our Coast Guard friends.
Oh, that's really important. There's so much water in Canada, so many boaters, leisure folks. And as you said, a little sad that folks aren't going out without proper life jackets. And certainly get quickly outside of cell phone range. I mean, I personally, on that flight from Toronto to Ottawa in the middle of nowhere, and with personal locating devices being so inexpensive, hundreds of dollars to buy and under $200 for an annual subscription.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's personal protection, right? Everybody should be making sure that they're putting means in place that if something goes wrong, but most people don't think it's going to happen to them until it does, right?
Hope for the best, but plan for the worst, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, any final words, guys?
Well, I just want to say, from an Air Force point of view, we have highly trained and dedicated personnel at the squadron that, you know, our job is to go out and search for those that get themselves in harm's way. And we couldn't do it without the support of our civilian organizations like CASARA and Coast Guard Auxiliary and, you know, other members. But together we work together to make sure that, you know, we're providing a SAR timely response within Canada.
So any final words, Terry?
Yes, I'd just like to thank our many, many volunteers. Our volunteers come from all walks of life, some of them with an aviation background, a lot of them pilots and navigators. But we have many of our spotters that have no aviation experience but join because they want to volunteer. And in a lot of cases, our best spotters are people that have never flown before and very soon become committed to our cause that others may live.
You know, I have to say, after interviewing this morning a bunch of the CASERA volunteers, there was really a very consistent message: volunteering, giving something back, saving lives. And thank you, gentlemen, for really being part of something that's absolutely mission critical to Canadian society. And again, thank you so much for being part of the Plane Talk Cockpit.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Phil.
Thanks for coming, Phil.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plane Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plane Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at planetalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at planetalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.